Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Amy Loboda, editor of Aviation for Women magazine and FAST Team representative, Fort Myers, Florida, who is today's host.
Welcome back. This is Amy Loboda, your host, and I have here with me today at Air Venture 2013, Sarah Wilson. Sarah Wilson has one of the most beautiful aircraft on the airfield this week. She's flying a 1929 Stearman Model 4 Speedmail. Now, Sarah, this is no ordinary 1929 Stearman Model 4 Speedmail. This is absolutely the most gorgeous. Oh my God, I had an emotional response when I saw this airplane. So you want to tell me a little bit about how you came upon it and ended up traveling the U.S. in this airplane?
Sure. I think, Amy, it's like a lot of things in people's lives that you sort of, through a series of coincidences that actually aren't coincidences, end up doing what you always wanted to do. And I was fortunate enough on the first American Barnstormers tour, I got to fly in Ron Rex's Model 4. And I'll be honest, it was at Frasca Field on a grass runway in the corn. And by the time I got back, you know, tears were just rolling out of my eyes.
Oh, I've been to Frasca Field, so I do know. I do know. But you have to back up because you have to tell me how you ended up with the American Barnstormers tour in the first place. Let's go back. Roll it back, baby, and give me the whole story.
Okay. I had started in aviation much later than a lot of people. I started on my 30th birthday. And at that time, I did an introductory flight, just happenstance to fly past it, airport in Traverse City. And I knew that this, after that flight, was what I wanted to do. I was fortunate enough to have a vintage car that I sold to pay for my ratings, and then went the very normal route. Flight instructor, build the time, go do a little corporate, do commuter flying first for American Eagle, then do corporate. And after doing that, I really was burnt out. I wanted to be a flight instructor always, but I just didn't find the joy in it that I'd found in the beginning. And I was in Denver and thought I would go back to school. And I got a call, as we all know in aviation, from a friend who you had flown with and a friend of a friend, you know, that type of call. And it was J.J. Happ, and he said, Kermit Weeks is looking for someone to do marketing. I'm going to put him in touch with you. And so I went down and interviewed, and in typical Fantasy of Flight way, they said, be here tomorrow. And, and so I landed in the, you know, the beautiful world of Fantasy of Flight in Kermit Land, and my eyes were opened to the fabric planes and the antiques and the World War II, and I didn't know anything about them. So after being there, Waldo Wrights was on the field doing new standard rides, and Rob Block approached me and said, you know, you're a CFI. I really want to do hands-on flights in the Stearman that my family has owned. Would you consider flying it? And I said, well, sure, because, you know, I'm a pilot. I should be able to just fly anything. I flew Learjets.
Yeah,
yeah. So I get in the Stearman, and you know, it just totally kicks my you know what. And then, you know, the thrill of that, of, oh, this is totally different, you know. And then I got to learn all over how to fly. You know, I got to learn how to smell altitude and hear airspeed and feel pressure changes, you know, through the movement of the plane and through the movement of the air, and how the, you know, the hairs on your arms will stand up right before a gust front comes that isn't forecasted on the radar. So, you know, once you start to do that type of flying, for me, there was no other way. So that's being there with Rob Block and at Fantasy of Flight introduced me into the inner sanctum of the quirky, antique, real vintage people, and I met the group of Barnstormers that then ended up starting the American Barnstormers tour.
Oh, that's fabulous. Now, about how long ago was that?
I think the first tour was 2005, I would say.
So this has been a while.
Oh, yeah. This is a process. Well, it took me a while not to have the Stearman kill me, so... Or maybe kill it.
That's generally the case, by the way.
Yeah.
You don't just jump in and fly it. No,
yeah.
I understand completely. So 2005, 2006, so how did you transition from, you did have a job at Fantasy of Flight,
yes,
to barnstorming?
Well, they, you know, Kermit and Teresa were very knowing and seeing that, you know, when I started to fly out there and got back in the plane, you know, I missed it. And I was real honest with them. And I said, I've got to go back in the air. You know, thank you for letting me help you. And I'll always help you in any way I can. But I need to get back in a plane. And so then once I started to fly again, I was doing rides for Rob. And then in the summertime, we would do the tours. And then as I started to travel in the planes, that's when the world opened up. That's when the colors changed. That's when everything, to be in the planes for months traveling is really my passion.
That's fabulous. Mm-hmm. So the Barnstormers led to this airplane. How?
Well, there's the Ron. So I'm at Frasca Field. So
okay.
I'm at Frasca Field on the first tour.
Yep. We've caught back up to
right,
Frasca Field.
And now, you know, the tears are coming down. And I said, this is the only plane I ever really run. This is the plane I want to have for my lifetime. I want a Model 4. And I was in love with the hardiness of the steerman and the engineering and the solid construction and the way they flew. And everybody said, well, I don't think there's one for sale. You could maybe try to get one out of paperwork. Or, you know, it was a little bit of a wall put up as to how do you get one of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think a phone call was made and they said, I think Kimball's have a frame hanging in the rafters. It's never been built. So I call them. Why, yes, Sarah, we do have a frame. It's owned by Barry Advent. He hasn't built it, but he doesn't want to sell it. So I make another call, and Barry and I spend like an hour on the phone and become BFFs. And he says, I like you. You're going to build it, aren't you? And I said, tomorrow. And I'll start tomorrow if you'll sell me the project. And he said, will Kimball's build it? I said, yep. And he said, can I fly into Kermit's place and have lunch and do the paperwork? And, you know, I text Kermit. He's like, yeah, I don't care. And so I'm like, yes, you can, and let's do this. So that's how I got my speed mail.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Excellent. How long did it take to build?
It took 5 years. It was a 7-year process. And like a lot of specialty restorers, they have planes in front of you. So it's not like you can just walk in the door and they start on it. But Kimball said we could start on it in about a year and a half, but they couldn't do the wings.
Hmm.
So my friend Jack McCloy is a beautiful, you know, wing builder and a great, you know, he takes care of all my planes. So Jack would start on the wings, and then eventually I would move on the floor. So then the process became about 5 years. And then when their other projects were done, the last 3 years were the real active, where I had the swarm on my plane, center of the hangar, and everybody was working on me, which was the best.
That's wonderful. How often did you get to be there, and did you get any hands-on time with the construction of it?
I am horribly inept on even, you know, using a screwdriver. So they knew better than to put me anywhere near it.
Don't let you touch it.
But the neat thing is that you get a relationship. The builder becomes like a family member, hopefully, for most people. And I would go visit my parts, as I called them. So for the first 4 years, I would drive up at least once a month, and they'd open the shed, and they would take time and show me something they hadn't seen before. Hey, Sarah, did you know you've got flying wires? Hey, Sarah, did you, you know, to keep mm-hmm. me encouraged. And then when it became on the floor, Kevin would send me tons of iPhone pictures. And
great.
And then I would drive up and be excited to see the new thing that they did. And some of those things are incredibly small. They seem insignificant, but it's probably like a child in the way of, you know, you see the first smile, you see things like that. You see these little teeny details that mean so much to you because it's like waiting for letters from home. You know, you're just so, when I would see his emails, I'd be so excited, like, oh, what am I going to see?
I really can relate to that because I watched my airplane being built in the hangar about 60 feet away from my office window.
Mm.
And you could see when the hangar door was open, you could see little changes, or you could hear the of the air
nice.
Compressor, you know, and you knew it was coming along.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was lucky though because they needed somebody with small hands to buck the rivets every now and again, and you know, have a lot of rivets, and I could do that. So it didn't require a whole lot of skill. It's really bad for journalists or typists to do rivet bucking, by the way, because it's very hard on the wrists. You have numb hands for the rest of the afternoon. Anyhow,
that's great.
Tell me a little bit about the day they rolled it out and said, "It's yours. Go fly it."
Oh, geez. It was my 49th birthday, and my father was visiting, and we were going to go up and see the plane because I don't think he'd ever seen the project. I pull up, and their driveway is very, very long, and it arcs around the edge of their grass runway leading up to their hangars, and my plane was out in the sun. I had never seen it in 7 years leave the hangar.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And they had hung the engine, and they were waiting for me to start it.
Oh.
And I just, you know, I guess all I do is cry. So I pull up, literally open the door of my car, leave it running. My dad sitting in the seat going, "What's up?" And I just, you know, just started to just sob. I was like, "It's here." And then Kevin walks up. He's so sweet. And he kind of bumps my shoulder like a big brother. And he goes, "You want to start your engine?" Ah! And I'm like, "Yes, of course I do."
So it has the most marvelous sound, but I can only imagine what the first time you start it sounds like.
Oh, it was, my hands were shaking, and of course I think I overprimed it and did whatever, but it started. Yeah, it's got such a beautiful lope. It's just such a slow, throaty, you know, it's just a really beautiful start, so it was a thrill.
Were you the first person to fly it, or did you have somebody else fly it?
Certainly it was a wise decision that they wouldn't have let me test fly it if I didn't have over a couple thousand hours in PTs. But I had this great idea that I could never go through my life blaming someone else for something to go wrong. And that I bought it, I'm going to break it. And that I was going to be the only one to fly this plane first. And I'm still the only one who's ever flown it. I will let other people fly him later, but right now he's all mine.
So what have you done from this point on? Once you got it going and you were sure the engine ran good, I mean, is it the first time this has been at Oshkosh?
Yes.
Okay.
This happened on August 17th last year was when I started it.
Okay.
And then I test flew, I think it was the 29th of August. And then you stay around home base for the first 10 hours. And, you know, we go back and say, "Oh, you got to tweak this or do this." It flew hands off. It was rigged perfectly. And then I needed to go. And I remember walking, the reason my plane's name is Buddy is that I walked in the hangar and I had packed him the night before. And I walked in that morning and I was scared. I had 10 hours in this plane and I was about to come up to Wisconsin and just go fly, because I had to teach myself how to fly them. And for me, the only way I can do that is to go on the road, just go out in different environments. And I walked in and patted him and said, "All right, buddy, you ready to go? We got to do this." And, you know, climbed in and figured it out. So I went out for, I think it was about a month and a half, and flew all the way up to Wisconsin, down through the Midwest, over to Oklahoma, Texas, back through Tennessee, and then back into Florida. So I did about 50 hours.
And was that with the Barnstormers, or
just on your own?
Just
in my bags.
Wow.
Yeah.
You got to have a strong soul and be ready to do that. I mean, all by yourself,
it's a leap of faith.
Yeah.
But it's especially good, not to generalize with women, but a lot of times we're used to flying with friends and husbands and boyfriends and things like that. We have this companion thing. And so to say, "No, I'm going to make all my own decisions. And wrong or right, they're going to be mine, and I'm going to figure my way out."
I'll tell you what helped me was getting my Part 135 IFR charter certificate. And I was flying in airplanes, and there was always a dead leg. And, you know, the airplane made funny sounds, and sometimes you looked at the fuel gauge and said, "Wait a second, I'm sure I had more than that." But you had to get through all those ghosts.
True.
And it made a huge difference. It made a huge difference. And sometimes I pine for that.
There you go. Then you understand. Yeah, it's really important that we go out on not just across country in our state, but really go across the country at some point in your flying to learn from that and to experience the real joy that you get from that type of freedom. It's just, it'll change you.
It will. And to this day, I far prefer flying solo in my aircraft or with a sleeping passenger.
Yes.
You know, than even having a second in command.
Mm-hmm.
I know the value of a second in command, and I certainly appreciate it, but that solitude is just divine, and it's one of the few places I can get it.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I get goosebumpy when you just said that. We get it. I know what you're saying.
But I would give anything to get a ride in that airplane of yours,
oh,
Sarah.
Of course. And I love sharing it with people. One of the things that I made up my mind with this plane because of the amount of years and time and money and sacrifice and all these strange things in my life, that my plane would only hold people who inspired me, that I would no longer just fly for money. Yeah, that, you know, you can come up, and I've put a hefty price on some of the flights I've done, and you can still not, just something's not right. I don't care how much money you have, you're not going to go.
So you got a meter in there.
I
you
do.
Just kind of measure the first.
Just a little bit of,
okay.
You know,
I like
what
that.
Does it mean to you, and do you realize how special it is, and how, you know, really that's a metaphor for what we get to do. Do you realize how special it is what we get to do?
Absolutely. Yeah. So true. So true. Sarah, if people want to find you, where can they find you?
I've put on my iPad now, it says something in a speed mail somewhere. Because I am nomadic at this point.
Is there a website or a blog where they can read about you?
Yes. I've got it. It's easy to remember. It's sarahwilsonpilot.com.
sarahwilsonpilot.com.
It's got my travels with the B-29, and I'm having just a blast blogging. It's been really fun to write about all the great synergy between what's happening to us in an airplane that really speaks more to what happens to us as people. And Oshkosh is no better example of that, of the family that comes here and shares things. What I think, Amy, is that a lot of times people can't say what they feel or what they think or the amount of love they have for other people, but they can talk about the planes. And then that camaraderie, that common language allows them to have that family feeling that, you know, is so well expressed here at Oshkosh, especially in the camps at night. I mean, it's just a giant love fest and a homecoming every single camp you go into. You know, you see people hugging and they're so excited to see each other. It's beautiful.
Absolutely beautiful. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to visit with us here during AirVenture 13. And we hope we see you again next year.
Somewhere in a speed mail.
Somewhere in a speed mail. That's right. And that's Sarah Wilson at AirVenture 13 and your host, Amy Labota. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. Please visit our studio website to hear past programs.